There's always been a demand for home entertainment, but before the radio, people had to provide it for themselves. As a result, for a long time, there was a demand for a single musical instrument that provided the same range and flexibility as an ensemble of instruments, but which would be small enough to fit in the home and portable enough to be used in concert performances. Keyboard instruments of some form have been around for centuries, and the earliest examples of the modern organ appeared in the 14th century. They've been popular for centuries for much the same reason as the radio is popular now. They allowed an individual musician to recreate the music of a whole ensemble. Put simply, a keyboard player has 10 fingers, but a flautist only has one flute. Organs aren't very portable, however, and they tend to come built into the architecture of the building that supports them, so demand increased for alternatives. By the 18th century, there were several options. The harpsichord, which featured a keyboard and plucked strings, was probably the most popular of these. There were also a few home instruments like the clavichord. With these keyboard instruments, the music of larger groups of musicians could be replicated, but at a serious cost. They were, at worst, capable of absolutely no dynamic variation. In other words, the music always sounded at the same volume. Or at best, the dynamics could be staggered by using separate keyboards or organ-like stops, so the music could be played either loud or soft, but with nothing in between and no way of moving smoothly from one to the other. On top of that, only the harpsichord sounded loudly enough to be played in concert. Many of the other instruments could only be played at home. This cost keyboards one of the most direct, beautiful, and simple means of expression, the crescendo and diminuendo. This was a serious cost, as these effects were very much in vogue in the 18th century. As a result, composers needed to find other means of writing passion into keyboard music, and they often achieved this through harsh and sustained dissonance. In this first clip from a keyboard sonata in F minor by Domenico Scarlatti, we'll hear an example of just that. It's performed on the harpsichord by Luc Beauséjour. The solution to the problem of dynamics was complex, but the biggest step forward came when, taking their cue from the dulcimer, keyboard makers swapped out the quills which plucked the strings inside the instrument for hammers which struck them. This had been attempted before, but the results had always been too quiet to use anywhere but at home. It was an Italian harpsichord maker in the employ of the Medici family, Bartolomeo Cristofori, who perfected the technique in the early 18th century. The mechanism he developed was a hugely complex feat of engineering. The hammers not only had to strike the strings, but had to rebound from them in order that the note would ring out without being stifled, and had to reset to their original position quickly and silently, so that notes could be repeated without noises coming from inside the instrument and interrupting the music. Cristofori's work was the 18th century musical equivalent of the microprocessor. It revolutionized the way the keyboard instruments were built, and within a century, the instruments which evolved from his design would be in every middle-class home in the Western world, and they would have thousands of pages of music written for them. It was way ahead of its time, too. A lot of other instrument makers tried to simplify his method, but every time they found that they had to sacrifice something, and every time it turned out that the best way to do it was the way that Cristofori had invented. He was less creative with the name, though. He called it the grave cembalo col piano e forte, which roughly translates to the harpsichord which can play loud and soft. This was later shortened to just pianoforte, meaning soft-loud, or the reverse, forte piano. Many composers of the time embraced the new sound made by this instrument, and music written for the keyboard flourished. Here's a section from a famous Mozart sonata, as you may not have heard it before. This is performed by Malcolm Bilson on a piano very like the ones from Mozart's lifetime. You'll probably notice that the notes die away much more quickly than on pianos you're used to hearing, and the sound of the instrument is more metallic and clipped. Thank you. main developments in piano construction came about at the end of the 18th and the beginning of the 19th centuries, and these happened to be the period of Ludwig van Beethoven's life. Chief among them was the replacement of the wooden frame with an iron one, which in turn allowed a wider range of notes, more controlled dynamic contrasts, and a much more powerful sound. A fascinating exercise is to listen to all 32 of Beethoven's sonatas in sequence, played on the types of piano that were available to him at the times they were written. He was always at the forefront of piano writing technique, and sometimes even ahead of it, although he was reportedly not overly fond of the instrument. According to legend, he regularly broke strings, often enough, in fact, that he had a technician on hand to disentangle the strings inside the piano during performances. His sonatas are a major milestone in the history of piano music, and he refused to let the fact that the instrument was limited slow him down. His 10th sonata uses a repeated idea in which we hear a wide jump up, followed by a small descent. Partway through the sonata, the idea returns, but because it begins a little higher, that jump would land right off the top of the piano. Though this would be possible on a modern piano, Beethoven's solution is to make the jump a little smaller and instead of descending a little, simply repeating the high note. Here's that sequence played on a period piano by Ursula Deutschler. The sustain pedal, familiar to all pianists nowadays, was one of the first created and one of the easiest to produce. But there were many more special effects stops and pedals which came and went in the early history of the piano, including the bassoon pedal, which gave the lower keys a sort of wooden rattling, and the lute pedal, which made it sound more like a plucked string instrument. Perhaps in another universe, the piano developed like the organ, each one with a variety of special effects and tone qualities available at the discretion of the composer or the performer. By the middle of the 19th century, the piano had caught on to such a degree that it would be impossible to list every important contributor, either in terms of engineering or composition. Beethoven's expansion of every aspect of music had an incalculable influence on those that followed him. Music had always been expressive, of course, but after Beethoven, it seemed impossible that any serious composer would write music for entertainment alone. His 32 piano sonatas were so revolutionary and so ahead of their time that many composers following him were reluctant to write sonatas themselves. Instead, composers were drawn to shorter works with freer forms than the sonata, and miniatures with poetic titles like Ballade started to spring up. Additionally, manufacturing techniques for the piano were more or less perfected by this stage. The piano of about the middle of the 19th century is almost identical, barring a few minor changes, to the piano as it's built now, and most of the famous piano workshops, such as Bösendorfer, Steinway and Bechstein, were founded around this time. With every great discovery or invention come those founding figures who seem born to use it perfectly. With the piano, one of the earliest of these was Friedrich Chopin, who wrote almost exclusively for the piano and grasped its unique sound and expressive range better and more instinctively than any composer before or since. Though he wasn't always impressed by the sometimes excessive expressiveness of his contemporaries, he created for the piano a unique and influential pianistic language, fusing national pride in Poland with Baroque and classical influences. In the 19th century, it became more and more important for composers to write music that was natural for the instruments they were writing for, and unlike Bach, who freely arranged the same music for different ensembles, Chopin's music is so perfectly pianistic it defies any arrangement. He's now often associated in recordings with the Polish pianist Artur Rubinstein, and here we hear the beginning of Rubinstein's recording of his E minor prelude. Thank you. The 19th century became the age of virtuosity. Beethoven's former student, the composer Karl Czerny, wrote to Beethoven complaining that one of his sonatas was so difficult that a student of Czerny's still couldn't play the opening, even though she'd been practicing it for weeks. That was only the beginning of the trend. Many musicians came to the fore, delighting in showing off their skill both as imaginative composers and technically accomplished performers. Composer-pianists like Sigismund Thalberg and Charles Valentin Alcan were extremely popular in their time, though they're probably less well known now. Robert Schumann, whose hopes of becoming a composer-pianist were dashed when he injured his hand, was probably the first composer to write a piece simply marked with pedal without specifying exactly how the sustain pedal should be used, and this became common practice. Other composers like Felix Mendelssohn, Johannes Brahms, Gabriel Fauré and César Franck pushed piano technique further both in terms of the sounds that could be drawn from the instrument and the technical abilities required of the performers. The contribution of Franz Liszt can't be overestimated. Only a year younger than Chopin, his physical technique was the greatest of his age, maybe even of any age. He combined incredible virtuosity with a flair for showmanship that he learned from watching Niccolo Paganini's legendary violin recitals. He composed a bewildering array of music, much of it for piano, and his piano sonata revolutionized not just the way that piano sonatas were thought of, but also the whole approach that composers took to developing themes and musical ideas. Although his piano work is most famous for its monumental and showy technical challenges, it was just as often reflective and peaceful. In later life, following his conversion to the priesthood, this sense of introversion and mystical wonder was paramount, even while his harmonic explorations fed into the musical direction of composers in the 20th century. By the dawn of the 20th century, the piano had become quite literally a household instrument. There was almost no middle-class home without one. James Joyce kept a famous, and famously out of tune, Petrov baby grand piano at all times with him during his semi-nomadic life in Europe. In a lot of ways, the piano was late to the revolution. The Industrial Revolution, which had propelled so many industries forward, only really took hold in piano manufacture in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Prior to this, pianos had been made in factories by a handful of craftsmen, but beginning around the 1860s and particularly around the turn of the century, machine production became generally accepted. It wasn't long, though, before the influence of the piano began to wane. The radio was becoming a feature in every home, and with the inventions of cinema and the car, both the time and the money which had once been devoted to the piano were being diverted elsewhere. The two world wars made serious demands on the steel and iron essential for piano construction, and during these wars, production all but halted. As both composition and performance became more complex fields, the era of the composer-performer also drew to a close, with even exceptionally good musicians tending to come down far more as one than the other. Probably the last of the great composer-pianists was Sergei Rachmaninoff. His melancholia-tinged music looked back to the high romance of the 19th century more than most composers of his lifetime. Other composers explored less well-established tone colours of the piano, from the brittle, spacious sounds of Anton Webern to the cooler, tonally ambiguous work of Debussy. Still others pushed ahead with exploratory harmonies and forms. The Russian composer Alexander Scriabin, continuing the trend from Liszt and Chopin, did a lot to revive the piano sonata. He only wrote 10 sonatas, but that alone is enough to outnumber those of most romantic composers, and they're among the most stylistically adventurous and musically coherent since Beethoven. The piano is technically classed as a percussion instrument, however, and another Russian composer, Sergei Prokofiev, who favoured the piano above all other instruments, explored and perfected a mechanical percussiveness which was as natural to the piano as the organic fluidity of Chopin, Liszt and the Romantics. Here, Martha Argerich plays his Toccata with a technical control and speed which haven't been equaled in any other recording. Since about the 1960s, experiment has been the key word for many composers. Special effect techniques had long before come into fairly common use on other instruments, such as the use of the wood of the bows on string instruments or overblowing woodwind instruments. But the piano, with its complex mechanics, gives opportunities for a world of alternative uses. John Cage, the American composer and pioneer of experimental music, famously invented the prepared piano, a conventional grand piano with objects such as pieces of rubber, wood or metal resting on and between the strings. This, more than anything, made the piano sound like a percussion instrument and gave it a primitive, ancient feel. Some composers took these experiments as just a starting point. The last recording I'll play is the conclusion of Stephen Scott's Sounding Landscapes, performed by the Bode Piano Ensemble. It's a curious inversion of the original intentions of the piano. What began as an instrument that allowed a single performer to mimic the sounds of several musicians playing together now actually has a whole ensemble playing at it together. They bow, knock, hammer, tap, clap and sing, gathered around a single grand piano, as well, of course, as playing the keys. And the result is just a taste of the world of sound that can be drawn from this single majestic instrument.